think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 330 of Low Limit Football on this 26th of June, 2021. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, the away goal rule is abolished in all UEFA competition to mixed reviews. We'll discuss our thoughts on the rule change. Copa America enters the final round of the group stage. We'll let you know where the teams stand currently. And the Euro 2020 kicks off its knockout round today with some very big matchups. We're going to discuss all of the matchups in 2020 Euro with our very special guest from OS Studios, Jack Grimsey, who's going to join us in just a little bit. But first, let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you, my man?
I'm good, Joe. Good. I'm happy that we're still in the swing of things with the Euros and the Copa America. A lot has been going on in both of those tournaments. And yeah, we're heading into the nitty gritty, or at least about to head into the nitty gritty with these knockout stage matches.
Yeah, you know, it was a bit of a suffering in terms of the Euros the past couple of days, not having any matches at all. You know, it was kind of sad. You could wake up in the morning, get a 9 a.m. match, or, you know, driving around and, you know, you get something on the radio, or you get that match at 3 o'clock. We did have a couple of Copa Americas to fill in the time in the evening, but ultimately it's like this, the reminder that the sad part of summer is coming, where there's really not much soccer going on until we get back to the league play at the end of August, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But that's the thing. This is like everything is going so quickly. And now with the World Cup happening in the fall or slash winter in our end, got to get all these matches out of the way.
Yeah, definitely got to get that and get back to qualifying, which is going to come up soon enough. So, my friend, you have the honors this week of trivia. So if you wouldn't mind hitting us with it.
Absolutely. So over the course of the last few days, we saw France take on Portugal in a 2-2 draw, a very entertaining 2-2 draw, if you remember, Joe. Mm-hmm. We got Karim Benzema scoring his first few goals for France after, I think, a 7-year exile or something along those lines. So it's been quite a while for him. And we also saw Cristiano Ronaldo get 2 goals in that game as well. But there is one record that Cristiano Ronaldo has broken. He did break the record for the most goals ever scored in a European competition ever. But over the course of the last few days, he's also broken the record with his 20th goal, having the most goals at the European competitions and World Cup combined. So my question to you is, whose record did he break?
Wow. European Cup and World Cup. That's interesting. It's going to have to be somebody that is a reasonably prolific goal scorer that plays in Europe, obviously, unless
in those tournaments.
Yeah, in those tournaments
and
combined.
It's a name, right? You definitely know.
Okay, all right. I'll we'll have to give that to you at the end of the show. You know, he scored a ton of goals, so I've got a couple of names that are dancing around in my head, and we'll have to figure out if any of them work. So we'll give you that again at the end of the show, like we said. Now let's hit opening thoughts. And opening thoughts is this week,
UEFA announced on Thursday that the away goal rule will be abolished in European tournaments for the 2021-2022 season. This is across all UEFA competitions, men's and women's, by the way. The rule's existence since 1965, and it's always been the tiebreaker for home and away matches to, you know, in terms of who would score the most road goals. This has been met by mixed reviews. They've taken this rule and totally wiped it out, so away goals don't matter at all now. I was a little mixed on it. I think it was a step in the right direction, but I don't think it takes the, I don't think it makes the competition the way it should be. I understand that we're playing over 180 minutes, but it does start to favor the home team in the second leg quite a bit now, because the home team in the second leg will get that huge benefit of playing at home for those 30 extra minutes of stoppage time and ultimately penalty kicks if it ever ends up there. And so I think there becomes an advantage at that point, where I thought originally the way the away goals rule was constructed, it was benefiting the road team in the second leg strictly because they could pack it in, you know, not give up that road goal in the first leg, go on the road, score that road goal, draw 1-1 and move on in the tournament. I would have liked to have seen a modified version of the away goal rule. I would have liked to have seen the away goals count up until that extra time. So if away goals counted and they were still tied, like a 1-1 draw here and a 1-1 draw there, then you play 30 minutes and the away goals go away. But I think that they should have maybe chopped it in half instead of totally wiping it out or totally keeping it in there. That would have been my way of managing the away goals rule. But they've gone to a full-blown nuclear removal of it. Rob, what are your thoughts on the removal of the rule, and do you think they got it right, or do you think that maybe it should be something a little different?
Yeah, I was having a bit of a thought of it, actually, ever since the change came about. And, you know, I think you brought up a good point, you know, that these teams now have to finally find a way to change their strategies in terms of, you know, from a tactical point of view, how to get into these matches. That, you know, if you're down one goal with an away win, or if you have the away, you know, you could pack it in and try to play in a different level. Whereas now it's just a case of, okay, you know, you scored, but it doesn't really matter at this point because you still have to travel at home and now have to get a result regardless. And now that it kind of really levels the playing field in a way, don't you think? I think that's kind of the main thing I got it from it.
Yeah, it prevents that home team in the first leg from totally packing it in. You know, that's what it does. It will, you know, by FIFA's thinking or by UEFA's thinking, it will open up the first leg of the match. The second leg, obviously, the cards are on the table. You kind of know what we're dealing with. And I think that, I don't think that match is quite as affected. But it really is looking at affecting that first match, you know, making sure that that home team does not pack it in to try and open up the football between the two teams. I mean, you know, I feel like if you've got Real Madrid and Manchester City playing each other, and Real Madrid, you know, prevents City from scoring, or even if they have manage a 1-1 draw in at the Bernabeu, and then they go to the Etihad, and then play that second leg, and then manage to win that 2-2, where they've scored more road goals, I think that there should be an accounting for that, because ultimately, over two legs, you would imagine that road team, that Real Madrid side, was the better team, having been able to score more goals in a hostile territory. It takes that away and now shifts the benefit of that match completely to Manchester City, because Manchester City will be playing in front of the home crowd for the additional 30 minutes and then penalty kicks as well. So it's, you know, it does open up the first match, but I think it shifts the benefit to the home side in the second leg, as opposed to the home side in the first leg. You know, do you see it that way as well? I mean, would you have changed anything else, or would you, you know, is there a different structure of the rule that you would have rather seen?
I mean, I would like to have maybe seen it in a way of having it to deal with it in extra time. Maybe, you know, just get rid of that, and whoever scores, you know, it doesn't matter if it's the away team or the home team. You know, the fact that you scored is what matters because of everything that you're going for. I think what would be very chaotic if they bring back the golden goal, but that's a different story in itself. But having said that, I think it kind of was something that kind of, and it also takes away some of the drama that we see from these type of games. You know, those kind of last minute winners. I think the big one that I recall, Joe, was the Lucas Moura goal against Ajax.
Yes,
the Manolas goal against Barcelona. You know, there's a lot of classic games that have come because of the extra the away goal. So it kind of takes away the emotion as well from these type of games, which is sad to see, because I really enjoyed those type of matches. And I do want to ask you in a way, because in a way, Juventus have been on the wrong end of the away goal rule, and maybe they kind of feel a bit grateful now, don't you think?
Yeah, they did. You know, against Porto, just this past year, they were not.
No, but before that, even the Lyon and Ajax as well.
That's right. That's happened to them a few times. Even Bayern Munich last year, getting knocked out by PSG on the away goals. So it's happened quite a bit. You know, and one of the things I was reading an ESPN article about it, drawing to the women's game, Lyon, who had won the last five women's Champions Leagues, were knocked out by PSG on away goals. So they could have gone for their sixth title, but were knocked out by away goals. So, you know, it does take some of that drama away. You know, I think the Manolas goal you brought up is certainly one of those, you know, one of those that will definitely stick in your head. The Lucas Moura goal against Ajax, getting Tottenham Hotspur to the final. Yeah, that's another major memorable moment. And we're going to probably lose those. You know, it's funny when you look at those matches, we're looking at big picture at that point, right? We're not looking at the moment. Because if I remember right, I want to say that Tottenham Hotspur were losing the match, and I can't remember. And I think it was a draw that brought them back to that point. And I'm not a positive on that, but I know you needed a big win from Roma over Barca, and you needed that extra goal. And because 2-1 wasn't enough, I think it had to go to 3-1, and that was the difference. You know, so we do lose those moments where you're looking at the match, but you're also looking at the big picture. At this point, it's going to be just the big picture, where you're just looking at the total goals and then figuring it out from there. So we'll see how it plays out. And you know what's going to happen is, come knockout stages of Champions League and Europa League next season, we're going to look at two-legged ties, and we're going to look at some of these matches and go, oh, well, this team would have gone through if they had the away goal rule, and now they got rid of it, so now this team's going through. You know that's going to come up. And hopefully it doesn't come up very often, but we'll definitely be discussing that and kind of criticizing it once it does happen, for sure, because that's just what we are. So let's table the discussion on the away goal rule and see how it plays out next season. And let's get our guests in here. Earlier, we were able to be joined by Jack Grimsey from OS Studios to break down every single match of the Euro 2020 as they kick off today at the time of this recording, really in just a couple of hours, with Wales and Denmark kicking off. So without further ado, the Jack Grimsey interview. And joining us now on Low Limit Football, from OS Studios, head of social media for OS Studios, Jack Grimsey. Jack, welcome back to the show. It's always great to catch up with you, my friend. We're going to take a nice heavy look at the Euros here during this segment of the show. And I'm going to open with obviously a match that I have a major rooting interest in, and that's Italy-Austria. Italy seem to be the heavy favorites in this particular one. They have not given up a goal in this tournament yet, winning all three matches, the first team to ever do that in the Euros. They are able to switch eight players out from their last match against Wales, giving rest to everyone. And the questions right now for Italy are, do they start Chiesa over Berardi or Berardi over Chiesa? And do they start Locatelli over Verratti or Verratti over Locatelli? Those are like the big first world problems that Roberto Mancini has right now in this team. But I can't find a pundit out there that will say that Austria is going to win this match. So what I want to ask you is, what does Austria need to do to win this match from Italy, or is it, you know, virtually hopeless for them?
Hey, Joe. Yeah, thanks for having me back, guys. For Austria, I think they need to play the game of their lives. Italy's been playing really amazing football, and like you said, they have these first-world problems, very good problems to have because their squad is so deep. And when it comes to Austria, they've been playing all right, but I think Italy's definitely one of the tournament favorites at this point.
I would agree with you. So from this point, you know, looking at these two teams, would you predict that, you know, we'll get a prediction. We're going to run through every match in the round of 16 here, so we'll do this pretty quickly. I'm predicting Italy will win the match today. I'll even put a score on it of 2-0. You know, that'll be a little edgy for me. I'll be at the edge of my seat until the final whistle with that kind of scoreline. But, Jack, what do you think is going to happen in this one?
Yeah, I don't think 2-0 is a far cry, Joe. That's a pretty good shot.
All right. Mr. Rojas, I want to send it over to you because we want to talk about Italy-Austria. We'll get your prediction and we'll look at the next match. What are your thoughts on Italy-Austria? And give us a prediction.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tight one as well. But I think given the quality that Italy has and have done so well to start off this tournament, I generally do not see anything else but Italy win. I'll say 2-0 as well. I'll be generous in that sense as well. So, Jack, I'll go to the next game as well, heading into on the same day. We got Wales against Denmark at the Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam. Obviously, Denmark getting that dramatic win on the final match day against Russia. And obviously, after everything that they've been through with the Christian Eriksen situation, and you know, they're taking on a Wales side that, you know, are pretty good on their self. You know, they beat Turkey, who many people thought that they were going to be kind of a dark horse in this tournament. Obviously, they fell flat on their face with 3 losses. Then they end up drawing Switzerland as well. So I'm curious to see how you view this match. And do you feel that with that win that Denmark have and that kind of motivation to, you know, play for Eriksen and kind of have that kind of understanding of what it means to them, do you feel that they're probably the slight favorites in this one?
I think this one's a toss-up. Like you said, Denmark, they're really energized after everything that happened to Eriksen. They felt kind of slighted that they had to go and resume that game just hours after. I think that's still a little bit insane, but credit to Denmark for getting through. They put on a great performance against Russia, and they have a lot of momentum coming in. But Wales, you know, they're always going to keep it tight at the back. And like you said, they came back against Switzerland. Kiefer Moore with that header. They really can offer a lot going forward when they decide to, right? Like, they're against Italy, they played all right. They tried to keep it tight. It was a changed squad for Italy, but Wales they're always going to be dangerous, and especially now in the knockout round, they're really going to want to show they can go as far as they possibly can in this tournament.
Yeah, I agree. And Joe, I'll go to you on this one. I personally think it is a toss up, but I have that feeling and that kind of sense of wanting to cheer on Denmark because of everything that they happened. But regardless of that, I think the quality that they have are just a slightly bit better than Wales. What do you think?
I agree. I think this team, you look at the tragedy that they'd suffered with Christian Eriksen, arguably their best player, collapsing on the field during that first match against Finland, to be able to step back into it, to be able to play well. And if you look at their results, they held Belgium for 45 minutes, where this was something where they were, you know, ahead in the match. I think that they have, you know, they're playing for something, they're playing for a cause, they're playing for someone that's dear to them. And we've seen the reaction around the world of the other footballers that have played with Christian Eriksen as teammates, either current teammates or past teammates. Christian Eriksen, it seems to be like he's a special kind of person to get that kind of support from all of these players from all over the world. And he becomes that cause that Denmark plays for. You know, unfortunately, Wales has not been the greatest of teams so far in this tournament. They did have a spirited battle against Italy in that final round. But I think Denmark in this one's going to be too much to handle, and I think Denmark will take the match. I would probably say something like a 2-1, and we'll have to see if even Gareth Bale can get off the scoring side and maybe get a goal in this one. So I'll have to go to the next match then, and that would be the Netherlands Czech Republic that's going to come up on Sunday. The Netherlands, one of three teams to go completely unbeaten in their group stages. Czech Republic qualifies as a third place side, but have really had a great emergence from Patrick Schick in this one. Denzel Dumfries on the other side for the Netherlands has been fantastic. He's been one of the star players of the tournament so far. Jack, how do you see this one shaping up between these two teams?
Yeah, that's a good question, Joe. I was just going to say, I think whoever comes through the Netherlands or the Czech Republic is going to advance to the semifinals. I think they'll beat whoever comes out of Wales, Denmark. But Netherlands, I don't know how much they were really tested in the group stage, but they look really good. Mm. They were clicking. They have a lot of young talent that they've integrated, like Daniel Malin, who has played a couple minutes up front, and they're really kind of integrating the next generation of talent, which kind of held them back, I think, at the last couple of tournaments we've seen them at, or even not qualifying previously. But I think it's going to be the Netherlands coming through here, even though previously I think I said Schick is going to win the Golden Boot, and he probably deserves it just for that, yeah, that goal from midfield, but he's not going to catch up to Cristiano Ronaldo in terms of goals.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well, and we'll get to Cristiano Ronaldo in a second, of course, but Roberto, with the emergence of the Netherlands, doing this without Virgil van Dijk, mind you, you know, certainly, like Jack said, not really challenged. Actually, the biggest challenge they had in the first in their group stage was from the Ukraine, not even from Austria, who finished second. Ukraine finished third in that group. So I see the Netherlands winning this one as well. How about you, sir?
Yeah, I agree. And in a way, it kind of does open a path to them to the semifinals. I think, you know, obviously, if they do end up winning this game, which I probably think that they will, and you would think that they have the talent to beat like the Wales, to beat Wales or Denmark, you could see them in the semifinals. And, you know, that would be a monumental achievement, given the fact that there had been so much criticism given to the Dutch side, you know, under Frank de Boer. And, you know, they've had a few injuries as well that they have been missing on, obviously, with the likes of Dumfries being the kind of a revelation for the side and the quality players that they have. I generally think we see, you know, the Dutch side that are kind of a bit under the radar in a way. I'm not saying that they have the potential to actually contend and win the Euros, but it's definitely up there. So, yeah, I see that Denmark getting this result and defeating Czech Republic. So obviously heading into this one and kind of the big heavyweight matchup that we'll see this weekend, maybe the big heavyweight matchup of the weekend, it's Belgium against Portugal. Obviously two favorites that are going into this tournament. Belgium, you know, also with a perfect record, three wins from their group with Denmark, Finland, and Russia. We saw Lukaku kind of light it up so far in this tournament. Kevin De Bruyne finding that combination with him. Portugal, you know, getting out of the group of death in the last day, you know, drawing France with Cristiano Ronaldo scoring, you know, they bounced back from that loss against Germany, and they also left it a little bit late against Hungary. So, you know, I think this is a really tight game, Jack, but I would understand, and I understand that the quality that Portugal has and having the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo, you cannot doubt him one bit. I think we saw that over the course of this tournament, even beforehand. But the way that they left it late, especially in games like this now where it's single knockout, and you know, we know Portugal have the potential of winning these type of tournaments as we saw 5 years ago. But you just think that Belgium have the upper edge, don't you think, just because of the way that they're controlling their matches and the way that they're winning convincingly?
Oh, definitely, Roberto. But if you're Belgium, how annoyed were you that you finished first, top of group, get three wins, and then they go, oh, here, defending champions Portugal. That's who you get in the first knockout round. I just think that, like you said, Belgium has been really controlling the matches, but Portugal, they know what it takes to get through a knockout tournament. Even if they haven't been playing their best football this year, they realize keep it tight, and if it goes to extra time, you get to penalties, who knows. But that said, I still think it is going to be Belgium.
Yeah, I personally agree. I personally agree Belgium will leave it very late. I think it'll be a very tight affair. I would not be surprised if this goes into extra time or penalties, Joe. What do you think about this one?
I would agree with you. I think this is going to be a tight affair overall. You know, we mentioned about Portugal having to, you know, play a tight match so that they can maybe play tight, counter, use someone like Cristiano Ronaldo as a one-on-one skill versus some of the Belgian defenders. But Portugal has not done very well so far in terms of locking down teams or anything like that. They've given up 6 goals so far in the group stages. Of the third place teams, only Slovakia gave up more, and they got bounced out of the tournament. And like you guys said, this Portugal side was within minutes of being eliminated from this competition, which is shocking. Jack, like you said, the Belgium side, they end up getting, you know, they run through perfect. They only conceded 2 goals in the knockout stages. And here's Portugal for you, the defending champions. Thanks for playing. You know, but in the round of 16, you're going to see good quality sides, you know, and unfortunately, you're going to get 1, 2, maybe 3 matchups like this. They're just going to lay out that way. So I think that's just how it's going to go. But I do think Belgium will progress in this match. I don't know that Cristiano Ronaldo himself is enough. And we haven't really seen a ton out of Bruno Fernandes so far for the Portuguese side. You know, great season at Manchester United, but then comes over here, and he might be one of those players that underperforms at the national level, kind of Ciro Immobile-ish, as opposed to his club side, which he was fantastic all season long. But I do think Belgium will progress in this one, but it'll be a very tight affair. The next matchup that I want to look at, though, is coming up on Monday, Croatia-Spain. This one is really, really interesting to me. We know the pedigree that Spain offers, but they did have a little bit of a stumble coming through the group stages here so far. In fact, if I remember correctly, and I'm just looking over my notes, finishing second to Sweden in Group E, and obviously not a major group, I would say. Slovakia finishing third, and then Poland, rather disappointingly, fourth in this particular round. When you look at Croatia ended up, you know, having a bit of a struggle as well in the group with England. They lost England 1-0. They draw the Czech Republic and then managed to squeak in under the gun against Scotland on the last day. So for me, this particular Croatia match versus Spain is very tough to predict because these teams are both ebbing and flowing in this particular tournament so far. We know the midfields that both teams offer and both are capable of controlling the ball. But Jack, I want to go to you because I think this one is really hard to predict. And I think ultimately it's going to be who's the best clinical finisher between Morata and you know, some of the strikers that we have options for on the Croatian side. What are your thoughts on this one? Because I think this one's really, really close.
You know, Joe, my opinion of Spain changed greatly after the last match they played against Slovakia. They hadn't shown really that finishing ability, and I think they've turned it on now, and they're not necessarily a dark horse because they're Spain. They're almost one of the tournament favorites at this point. I think they're going to breeze by Croatia. I think it'll be 3-0 or 3-1.
Wow, that's pretty bold. You know, Roberto, I want to throw over to you because I feel like this could be an extra time match, and Jack saying 3-1, I mean, it would be an amazing match if it was 3-1.
I mean,
just
the last thing, Joe, like, yeah. I think Croatia was almost a team that really really was hurt the most by this tournament being postponed a year. Their squad has just aged quite a lot, and yeah. Spain almost has some of that youth coming through, and they look fresh, and they have so much technical ability.
That is a fantastic point. You know, adding a
I agree. I think they definitely have the quality, but you also, you know, kind of question, okay, how good are they really going to be, like, when it comes to these type of matches now that, you know, going into the knockout stages. I'm going to have to disagree with you, Jack. I don't think Spain are going to breeze through it, but I think they will get the win there. I'm going to have to go, I'll say 2-0 on this one. I think they have the quality enough to get the win. But again, I think it's going to be a really interesting affair. But I see Spain with just the upper edge just because of the quality and even the age when it comes to these type of matches. That factor will come into play. So I'm going for Spain on this one. And obviously now looking into the next game, obviously, we have the defending world champions in France taking on Switzerland. France, you know, kind of we're going into this tournament as kind of the, you know, overwhelming favorites. And you know, now looking into it, only one win and two draws, even though they topped their group, it wasn't that France that you expected them to flourish across all cylinders. But, you know, I think that's what makes them so special, kind of in a way that Portugal are, like, you know, that they can get the results when needed. And now heading into the knockout stage, Jack, I think really will be a tight affair, but you would think that with the quality that they have, that they have enough to go past Switzerland.
Yeah, and like you said, only one win in the group stage, and that was just that Mats Hummels own goal in the game against Germany. How impressed were you by France in the group stage, Roberto?
Sort of impressed. I mean, I kind of did like the quality of the players, like Kante, Pogba, Benzema getting on the score sheet as well. I think that was very impressive. But, you know, you don't know how good they are in defense. And that was kind of a worry that I've actually had during the World Cup when they won it. It was like how that defense, with the quality that they have, is great. But, you know, just trying to get those results and trying to drop back when needed. And Joe, you know, I think for France nowadays, even with the quality that they have on the attack and the midfield, you know, it's just in that back line. It's still a bit questionable to me.
Yeah, I mean, the back line is still probably their weakest point. You know, and also let's also look at this factor in the group stages. Like we said, two goals from Benzema, a goal from Griezmann, the own goal from Hummels gives them the only win. No Kylian Mbappe there. How long are we going to keep Kylian Mbappe off the score sheet? I mean, we know he's a goal scoring machine. We know he's capable. We know that he's a guy that's hungry for goals. He's almost like Ronaldo esque in that regard. So, Roberto, I'm just going to go back to you because, I mean, that would be the key for me for France moving forward. If they're going to really flex their muscle as world champions, I think it's on the shoulders of Kylian Mbappe. Is that too much pressure to put on the young man?
He's got to step it up, though. That's the thing. I think if it's a player that, you know, is kind of that big hope, probably the brightest jewel of the crown of the entire French side, he has to step up. And these are the type of matches that comes in for him to shape it up and to really demonstrate why he is one of the best in the world. So yeah, I think he has to have a fantastic match. But again, because of him being a supporting cast that has a lot of players on the attack, it doesn't have to come that pressure. You know, it could be the likes So yeah. Benzema could be the likes of Griezmann, you know, and many other players on the attack.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, I think the three of us are in agreement that France will handle Switzerland. Switzerland, I think the stat that I saw was they haven't beaten France since 1992, so that's going to weigh on their heads. And, you know, there's kind of that mental game that happens in the background, and it leads me to the next match, because if there was ever, you know, a mental game, it's England-Germany, right? This is a side, England, up until the last World Cup, really could not beat Germany. I mean, it was a mental block against them. And here they are in the round of 16 facing each other. England, everyone will brag that, you know, England hasn't conceded a goal yet. But then everyone will look at England and say, you've only got two Raheem Sterling goals in the entire group stage, a stage that you should have done way better than that. No Harry Kane. He's been almost non-existent. But the quality on the back line for them has been absolutely fantastic. On the flip side, Germany, again, losing to France with the Hummels' own goal. They come back and flex their muscle against Portugal in a 4-2 victory. But then on the last day against, it's escaping me now, and I'm going to go back and look real
Hungary.
Quick. Against Hungary, thank you. You know, drawing 2-2 and really needed to draw that match late. It was a Leon Goretzka goal that got them into that second place spot and into this particular match. So, Jack, to you, this one's going to be really, really tight. And the fact that it's played at Wembley coming up in a couple days is certainly a massive benefit to England in this particular matchup. But the bugaboo of Germany in England's minds is always there. How do you think this is going to play out?
Yeah, that's the thing, Joe. You'd think it's a big advantage to England playing at home, right? But Germany, like you said, they could only squeak by in Munich against Hungary. Like they gave up that opening goal and were in a state of shock. And after equalizing, gave up another go-ahead goal to Hungary just 2 minutes later. So they didn't really look all too convincing during the group stage. But then there's England, who, like you said, they've been keeping it tight at the back, three clean sheets. That is impressive. But they've only scored two goals, at least, of any team that's progressed to the knockout round. So I think this one's destined for extra time. And personally, I hope it goes to penalties, because, like you said, like England can't get by Germany. And then the other classic trope that Germany always scores all their penalties and England can't win on penalties. I think it'd be hilarious if it goes to penalties. I don't know. I can't see England beating them for some reason, even though I think they have one of the most talented squads in the tournament. I think it's a terrible draw for England.
English fans running to churches all over the world right now, praying that this doesn't go to penalties right now. Roberto, I mean, for me, I would agree. I think Germany has enough talent definitely to win this. I think the familiarity of Kai Havertz and Timo Werner playing in that 1 year in the Premier League is going to help them quite a bit. I think there also is the factor, everyone's talking about Jadon Sancho possibly getting into this match, but the German side is full of players that know Jadon Sancho, so Gareth Southgate might not be inclined to play him, and there's that whole match going on. But I think if this goes to penalties, this is a nightmare situation for England. And I do ultimately think, I don't think it'll go to penalties, but I do think Germany will win this one. Roberto, how about you, sir? What do you think?
I like to play devil's advocate, and the reason why I like to be, it's because, you know, we saw that kind of thing in the World Cup where England can't win their penalty against Colombia, though. So is this a new age of England now trying to finally beat their hump? I don't know. But for some odd reason, I like the drama. I like the storyline. I think England are going to do it here. I think it's going to be a very tight game, though. I would probably see it in extra time as well. And then for some reason, it's going to be like one of those it's gonna be like one of those shootouts. I'm gonna go on a bold prediction here, guys. It's gonna be like one of those shootouts that we saw in the final between Villarreal against Manchester United. Something like that. Just keeps going on and on and on. I just, for some reason, like I have that vision, and I think England go through it. I think they just squeak by just a bit. Listen, if Jadon Sancho is able to play this match, because I think he's a player that, you know, obviously has played in the Bundesliga, has that kind of experience of knowing what these German players are like. I think he would be a fantastic asset if he starts. And having the likes of Jack Grealish, which of course Jack definitely is a big fan of. Germany are a good side. That whole history that both those teams have is very much up in the air, as we know, not just from a football standpoint, but obviously outside of it. I think England just squeezed by just a bit here. I personally think that way. So, but it's going to be a really tight game. It's going to be, I think that side of the bracket is going to be very interesting to see. But yeah, I think if England do indeed beat Germany, and you know, I think now they can be a serious contender to go in and win the Euro. I'm not saying they're the favorite to win it at the moment, but you know, defeating a classic rival and a favorite like Germany has to give them the momentum and the confidence to do well in the significant matches. So I'm excited. I'm definitely excited for this one. And so, Jack, on the last one, you know, kind of a different matchup in comparison to what we're going to get from England-Germany, it's Sweden against Ukraine. Sweden, you know, actually topping their group, you know, holding Spain, beating Slovakia, and then defeating Poland in the last minute. Poland's out with Robert Lewandowski. Ukraine, you know, just getting it late. You know, despite the fact that they lost it for two games, they defeated North Macedonia, and that was enough for them to qualify as one of the best third place teams, the final third place team, actually, if you look at the ranking. I think Sweden have the capability of doing this. I think when you have the likes of Forsberg, Kulishevsky, Alexander Isak, who's been playing very, very well so far as well, I don't see anything else but a Sweden win. What do you think?
Yeah, and Roberto, I like the point that you brought up about Sweden's two young attackers, Isak and Kulishevsky. How lucky are they to have two talented young attackers instead of, I don't know, like Scotland, they have three really great left backs. I think they're lucky in that way. Ukraine, they didn't play too badly. They scored twice against the Netherlands. They were really in that match until the end, and just losing 1-0 to Austria. So I think some people are underrating them, but Sweden, almost one of the dark horses of the tournament, if they can get through this matchup against Ukraine, and then who knows? Like England, like you said, they could be really energized if they're able to beat Germany. They think, oh, we can win it all. We got over this hump. We beat Germany. But you can't really discount Sweden yet. That said, I think Sweden are going to come through this game. Maybe 2-1. Maybe 1-0. They showed a lot of quality, I think, defeating Poland at the end of the game. They just had counter after counter, and they were looking bound to score as Poland pushed everyone forward. So if Sweden get into an early lead, you know what they're going to be looking to do: keep it tight at the back and then add another one.
100%. Joe, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I think this one is going to be a little bit of a tighter matchup. You have you had the emergence of Yarmolenko and Yaremchuk for Ukraine. Malinovsky as well has played very, very well. But then, like you said, on the Swedish side, you've had Emil Forsberg, who's scored their goals or been scoring their goals. You've got some young players in Isak, who's looked fantastic, and Kulishevsky, who hasn't really seen the pitch much yet so far in this tournament, but certainly we know what he's capable of doing. I think this one's going to be a tight one. I know everyone's predicting Sweden. This one, I think, for me, is most likely to go to extra time. I really feel like there's an extra time built into this one. And it's tough to say who's going to win. I'm going to say Sweden right now, but man, I'm not comfortable making that prediction as we sit here, because I think this match can really go either way no matter what. So, Jack, before we let you go, and I want to again thank you for coming down and helping us break down the Euros as we run into the round of 16 coming up over the next few days. Where can everybody find your work, my friend?
Yeah, you could find me on Twitter. A lot of it is for clients as we do at an agency, but you can check out our website always, and that's linked through my Twitter. So just go there at Chuck Grimsey.
Awesome. Jack, thanks again for coming on the show. Always appreciate catching up with you, my friend, and look forward to having you back soon.
Joe, Roberto, thank you so much for having me on. It's always my pleasure, and really love the show, and thanks again for having me.
And special thanks again to Jack Grimsey for joining us on the show. Roberto, let's go into Copa America as they're really getting ready to finish off the group stages here. As we look at the standings at the moment, Argentina currently leading Group A on 7 points. They still have one more match left against Bolivia coming up. Actually, the 28th, that is going to be on Monday. Paraguay currently on 6 points. Their match up is against Uruguay on Monday as well. Chile have completed their matches. They're currently sitting third, 5 points, and risk dropping into that fourth spot, which will become very, very important in a moment. Uruguay on 4 points, and Bolivia officially eliminated from the tournament on 0 points, only scored one goal so far in this tournament. On the B side, Brazil already won the competition, or already won their group, and that's why it becomes important. They're on 9 points, perfect, three wins. They've already won. They're currently perfect on 3 wins. They do have one more match coming up, and that is going to be on Monday against Ecuador. Colombia have finished their competition. They are at 4 points at the moment and currently at risk of their fate being held in everybody else's hands. Peru also tied on 4 points as well. Their match coming up on Monday against Venezuela. Ecuador is on 2 points, currently awaiting that last match against Brazil. And Venezuela also on 2 points. Again, a team that suffered a great deal under COVID testing and that sort of thing, missing half of their team. They're on 2 points also, and awaiting that final matchup against Peru. The fourth place team in Group A, like we said, right now could be any one of Paraguay, Chile, or Uruguay. Bolivia's out. I don't think Argentina can be caught for that spot. So, they cannot, because Chile would drop into that spot.
I'll correct you, Joe. Paraguay can't go to fourth because they have enough points to. Because Chile can't play the final game.
Ah, that's
they
right.
Already have more points than Chile.
Thank you. So it's Chile or Uruguay. That's right. I knew I was missing some math there. Thank you. So it's between Chile and Uruguay. Chile have to hope that Paraguay wins the match, because if Paraguay loses the match, I'm not sure. Actually, by draw, if I'm looking at this math correctly, Roberto.
Because a draw would be enough, because Uruguay
goal differential
would have 4 points and Paraguay would have 7, exactly.
Right, but
a draw would be enough.
I'm sorry, Uruguay would have 5 and they would draw with Chile, but because of the goal differential, they would be a plus. They would be a plus one. Chile is a minus one. So
Paraguay would have to win. Paraguay have to win.
Yeah, Paraguay would have to win for Chile to be safe in that regard. Otherwise, Uruguay or Chile will be facing Brazil coming up at the end of the week in the round of 16 matchups. The quarterfinals. On the other side, Colombia, like we said, they're done for the moment. 4 points, 4 points after 4 matches, a win, a draw, and 2 losses. Closing out their run with 2 straight losses against Peru and against Brazil with 2-1 defeats on both sides. And, you know, this one is a little more exciting, but because you could actually go from Colombia being eliminated to Colombia staying in second place, depending on how things fall. It's going to be a rather interesting and a rather nervy time for them moving forward here. Let's go back to Group A, because I want to get your thoughts on Group A, especially how Paraguay have performed so far, which I think they've performed incredibly well, and what your thoughts are of them, you know, advancing possibly as high as even first, if you think about it, and winning Group A.
Yeah, that's actually a really good realistic opportunity or scenario, Joe. You know, Paraguay could indeed win their group, but they also need a favor from Bolivia in this sense, where Bolivia, you know, have a pretty poor record in this competition and playing against Argentina. It seems highly unlikely that's the case. Having said that, I think Paraguay do have the quality to get a result, at least against Uruguay. I see this Uruguay side, and, you know, and it's kind of the same problems. Okay, they got the win against Bolivia, but, you know, these days you should get your win against Bolivia, even though one of them was an own goal. Mm-hmm. They just did not look convincing in the last few games. We saw that even from that first game, if you remember, Joe, back in the qualifiers against Paraguay over there in Montevideo, and then starting off, you know, getting their first win in 5 games now. I see another tight affair personally. I think Paraguay would like to go and get the win, because that would be a huge result for them to potentially get more of a motivating factor. So I personally would like to see them win. I think I see a draw on this one, and I think Argentina will get the win against Bolivia. So that means it would be Argentina in first, Paraguay in second, Uruguay in third, and Chile in fourth place on this one.
And they draw the hot seat. I think it's important for Paraguay to finish second in this group. And my explanation to that is the way the brackets are broken out for Copa America moving forward into the quarterfinals, the Group A winner and runner-up are on one side of the bracket, and the Group B winner and runner-up are on the other side of the bracket. So the winner, the first and second place in Group A, is going to avoid Brazil until the final, which I think is a massive, massive thing to do. It's ultra important, I think. So I think Paraguay is going to play this matchup, you know, on the front foot against Uruguay. They're going to want to win. They're going to want to secure that second place. Even a draw would work for them in that regard. But I think they want to secure mm-hmm. second place at minimum, or win the group, because that will allow them to avoid Brazil all the way through. Same with Argentina. They're going to want to avoid Brazil all the way to the final, because you're going to end up with that possible Brazil-Argentina, you know, final matchup, which would be, you know, fantastic. But it's not going to be an easy road, even if they do finish first or second, because third or fourth place can be anybody of, you know, Venezuela, Ecuador, and Peru, who have all three of those teams have been so-so. And Colombia, you know, is on the back foot right now, but we know the danger. We know if Zapata and Muriel finally get going, that will be something, you know, very difficult to manage. They're going to be tough on every defense. And you know, the top two defenses in the other group, obviously Argentina and Paraguay, which it shocks me to say that I'm saying Argentina is a top defense, because we know that they can be suspect there. But lo and behold, they've only conceded one goal so far in this tournament. So it's not going to be easy, but the top side of that run will definitely benefit them. Let me ask you this. Of the Colombia, Peru, Ecuador, Venezuela, which one of them, I mean, do they sit there and say, hey, we don't really want to finish in second in this group because of the, you know, we'll face Brazil in the next round? Or do you see them saying, hey, listen, let's just get, you know, it is what it is. Let's just go and let's attack and let's play good football and move on from there? Because there is, you know, a back door of avoiding Brazil, which I think all of these teams would want to do. What are your thoughts about that?
I mean, kind of similar scenario with the Euros, like you said about Italy. You know, I think you said that you'd rather want them finishing second instead of first, because that way they avoid the hard side of the brackets. No, you play the opponents that you have to play. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. And mind you, Joe, you know, Brazil, as we've seen, yes, they have been dominant so far. They've won all three of their games. But if you saw in the game against Colombia, they were losing at one point. And I don't know if you saw the whole controversy with the referee hitting the ball, yes, and Firmino got the goal, and then the last second win with Casemiro on Martin in the corner. Brazil, if you can actually set up properly, you can get a result and you can hold them off. I'm not saying you can beat them, but you can challenge them for at least. So, yeah, I think it would be absolutely catastrophic. I mean, first of all, it would be huge if Ecuador were to get a result against Brazil. That would be enough for Colombia. Well, the only way Colombia gets eliminated is that if Ecuador beats Brazil. I think that's the only way. And if Venezuela get a result against Peru.
Yeah, and I don't think...
That'd be the only way. Yeah, so yeah, and I don't think any of them will happen either. So right. I think I see Brazil winning that. I see Peru winning that one as well. So that means they would finish in seconds. Colombia would go third. And then Ecuador, without a win, would go into fourth.
Yeah,
and that's how I personally would see it.
And they advance. And I think it's unfortunate. I mean, it's fortunate for Ecuador, unfortunate for Venezuela because of, you know, the whole thing where I think they lost 12 players to COVID testing. You know, mm-hmm. it's so unfortunate for them because this is such a good young team. I don't know why Wilker Farinas didn't start the first match. I know we talked about that. He's really been the difference for Venezuela so far in this tournament. Moving forward from that point, despite the COVID situation for them, he's been an absolute star and one of the best players in the tournament for me so far. It's mind-boggling why he didn't start. But again, like you and I had talked about, he was a little off form, not getting much playing time in France. So I think they went with, you know, what they went with. And then when they moved to Farinas, he became the Wilker Farinas we all are familiar with. So there is that potential. I mean, you know, you're going to have Venezuela hold on against Peru, where you have really no scoring punch for Venezuela right now. Joseph Martinez is out. He's one of those COVID players. And then Peru is starting to get a little more confidence. You know, the win that they picked up against Colombia, which was massive for them moving in this tournament, and then Ecuador, you know, with the 2-2 draw there, I think they're playing pretty well. We're going to have to see if they can muster the rest of it against Venezuela and keep themselves in that spot and move up to second, like you said. But they could possibly move up to second with just a draw. And then Venezuela with a draw might actually sneak in over Ecuador, who might lose to Brazil. So there's a lot of moving pieces, amazingly, with one match to play. So definitely going to be worth watching. That's your evening. And if you're in the United States, that's your evening watch all the time is heading over to Fox and watching the Copa America. It's been great football so far. And of course, with CONMEBOL, you know, without controversy, with Pitana getting in the way of that ball and leading to Brazil's first goal in that match, you knew it was going to happen eventually. Are you shocked at seeing the amount of stoppage time we're seeing in these last few matches?
Yeah, but who's that to blame?
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Yeah, well, in the Brazil match, I think it was 10 minutes in the Brazil match, and most of it was because of arguing. So welcome to CONMEBOL.
Yep, and that was a huge factor as to, I think, why Colombia lost.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
No way.
I completely agree with you. So because it allowed for the extra time, but so yeah, let's check those out and let's give you some matches of the week. First, I'm going to go off on the Copa America, give you the last round 5 of the group stage. And one of my apps, it reported wrong. So on Sunday night, which would be tomorrow night, Brazil-Ecuador is going to be at 5 o'clock and Venezuela-Peru at 5 o'clock. And on Monday night at 8 o'clock, we're going to have Bolivia-Argentina and Uruguay-Paraguay. When we go to the Euros, looking at it this week. Today, in just a couple hours, we'll kick off with Wales and Denmark at noon, and we've got Italy, Austria at 3 o'clock today. On Sunday, we'll have Netherlands, Czech Republic at noon, Belgium, Portugal at 3. Monday, Croatia, Spain at noon, France, Switzerland at 3. And then on Tuesday, England, Germany at noon, and Sweden, Ukraine closing out the round of 16 at 3 o'clock. The quarterfinal matches will be July 2nd and July 3rd. So Friday and Saturday, we don't know who's going to be playing in those matches yet. So tune in. And I believe also, Roberto, if I remember correctly, the 2nd and 3rd is also the days for the quarterfinals of the Copa America. And again, the only one we know,
that's right,
is Brazil is playing on July 2nd. That's all I've got for you. We'll have to see as that fills out on Sunday and Monday who we'll see from there. So that's the matches to watch out for this week. Also, MLS is back in action, so we'll start filtering those matches into our match of the week as well when we give you our next show. Check your local listings for the matches that are available in your area as well. So Roberto, you gave me a great trivia question at the beginning of the show. I'd like you to repeat it for the listeners, please.
Absolutely. So in the game between France and Portugal, Cristiano Ronaldo scored a brace and he scored his 20th goal in World Cup and European competition, European Championships combined. Whose record did he break?
I'm going to go with Miroslav Klose.
He had 19 goals and he was wow, the player with the most goals at the World Cup and the European competitions until a certain Mr. Cristiano Ronaldo came in and stole it. Yep, that's right. Miroslav Klose held the record.
For a second, I thought you were going trick question on me because of the World Cup adding into that. But then I thought to myself, wow, you know, with the multiple matches, who are the big goal scorers for teams that have always been there? And Klose's name just all of a sudden just popped in my head. I got.
It's like one. He's always a name in those records.
I know, right?
When you think World Cup, you think.
Surprised it wasn't Alan Shearer the way things go with the goal scoring record. So, but hey, blind squirrel finds a nut, right? I'll take it. So, without anything left on the docket, my friend, let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
Here we go. So for episode 330 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Jack Grimsey for joining us on the show. Next week, we will give you the semifinals and the final matchups for the Copa America and the Euros. We'll talk a little MLS as well, and maybe even filter in some transfer news as that starts to heat up as well. So for episode 330 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Ritter Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.